I don't know your name.
So, and Michelle, we won't be sharing the tape with.
No, it's just for us to get, we're not going to give this to anyone in your curriculum committee or department. Leah and I are going to, she's going to lead most of the focus group. I'm going to take some notes because I want to be thinking of things as I listen to you talk, but then we're going to go back to this recording just to make sure that we don't miss anything. All right? So, we want you to be comfortable and be honest. I mean, I think your department is commendable that they are even doing this. This is unheard of. And I worked with all four schools on this campus. So this is a pretty good mic, but don't whisper. And it's multi-omnidimensional, so it should get everyone at the table.
Yeah, you don't mind. I'll shut this one.
Did you introduce yourself, Leah?
I just introduced myself, yeah.
Okay. All of you know who I am? I met some of you. I work with the Center for New Media Teaching and Learning. I'm an educational technologist. And I worked with Leah and Dr. Schwartz on this evaluation project.
So, I'm not sure how much Sharon has filled you in on this, but just in 45 seconds or less. The EPI department just embarked on a new doctoral curriculum starting this year, and one of the things, again, as Michelle was saying, sort of unheard of yet totally logical, is that they wanted to actually know whether this approach and this curriculum works any better than what they were doing before. So these mid-semester, and then we'll do end-of-semester focus groups, are one component of the logic model that we developed to figure out whether or not students are getting out of the program what the department is hoping that they are. So that's the purpose behind this. So we're going to stick sort of to a protocol just so that we can get consistency across focus groups. As I said, my name's Leah. I would love for you all to introduce yourselves just so I can refer back to you by name. But again, just the fact that your name is on this tape is just going to be for Michelle, and I won't be. And then James said that this class is dreadful or anything like that. So Aravind, do you want to go ahead and start?
Yeah, I'm Aravind. I'm a first year DRPS student.
I'm Linda Kahn, and I'm coming out of the NMPH in Potsdam.
I'm Suzue Saito, I'm first year in.
Zach Prince. Abdul Al-Sayed.
Beth Rubenstein.
Great. And I'm Leah, and that's Michelle. So I think we're going to start with a couple of questions about your expectations and whether the environment that you're in right now is matching up to those expectations. So I guess I'm just going to start with a general question about what you hoped to get out of this semester and what you continue to hope to get out. So thinking back to maybe 6 or 8 weeks ago before you embarked on the program, what were some of your hopes for it? And then if you can speak a little bit to how your experience so far has matched up to your expectations or not, and sometimes that can be for positive or negative. Your expectations might have been lower than what you've experienced, or you might have had expectations where you've been disappointed that they haven't been met so far. So I'll just open that to the floor, and anyone who has thoughts can feel free to jump in.
We're quantitative people.
Okay. How many of your expectations were met or weren't met? And to what degree and what percentage?
I'm because of not having the EPI NPH, I'm sort of off kilter in terms of the sequence of EPI courses, so I wasn't able to take an EPI skills course this semester.
Okay.
So I feel like I'm, what I was hoping, what I need, and what I was hoping would be that I would be building up my EPI skills, and I'm sort of feeling I'm in limbo a little bit.
Okay.
Until I can take EPI 3, which is not till a summer course.
Okay.
The one skills class I am taking is the applied regression class in biostats, which is very, very good. But the two EPI classes I'm taking, I'll be honest, I think they're a little weak.
Okay.
They're both required, the history of EPI class and the biology and pathophysiology class.
Okay. So you won't have a chance to take a skills course until the summer?
Right, that's unfortunate for people who are not coming out of EPI. I think that should be rectified.
I think, I do think that just in terms of scheduling, it is tricky. I also am not coming from an EPI background, so I'm currently taking EPI 3, which probably shouldn't be. I mean, it's fine, but because I didn't want to wait till the summer. It's just very tricky with the scheduling. When you, of course, everyone comes in at different spots in the curriculum, but it's just so rigid. And in order to, I really want to get in on the mm-hmm. EPI curriculum, which starts with EPI 4,
mm-hmm.
and there's just this catch up to.
I mean, some kind of maybe a boot camp experience for people who don't come out of EPI would help us get on track quicker.
Could you just a little bit more detail of how that has affected your progress so far?
Well, in history of EPI, in history of EPI, I mean,
he's expecting a certain level of knowledge.
He's very disappointed, I think, that he can't teach. I mean, he just keeps saying we're PhD students, and some of us respond to that we weren't PhD students 3 weeks ago. I mean, we don't. He assumes that we basically have already completed the PhD curriculum, and I think he's slowly coming to terms with the fact
mm-hmm.
that we don't have a full set of EPI methods at our disposal. But that was quite surprising to him that we couldn't be discussing these articles at the same level as he would want to.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I also am not coming out of an EPI background.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking EPI 3 and 4 at the same time.
Wow.
And it's not ideal, but manageable. And I think, so it's kind of hard to talk about what my expectations were, just because I sort of feel like I am getting like a crash course or like a refresher from the EPI classes that I did take during my master's, and it's kind of like a flood of methods. And so I don't know if that met. I think that's actually sort of consistent with my expectations.
Okay.
But it would have been nice to be able to spread things out a little bit.
I took all the EPI prerequisite classes before, so for me it's been pretty good.
Okay.
I'm taking EPI 4. I'm part time, so I'm only taking two classes.
Okay.
EPI 4 and then bio. For bio, I have opinions, but EPI 4 has been great. It's sort of reading a lot of articles and applying what I've already learned in EPI 1, 2, 3. It's organized very well. It's a lot of reading, but I expected it to be a lot of reading, and it's been really good.
Yes, I would
fully
agree.
Meeting my expectations.
Yeah, I think EPI 4 is a great class.
Okay.
I echo that. I think it's really well done. And
good articles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good moderation by the professor. It took a while for us to sort of figure out what the we have group presentations every week, and sort of trying to figure out a best format took maybe a few weeks, but now I think we're in a good rhythm where so the group leads and
mm-hmm.
the professor sort of prompts, and
it's what I expect out
of
like
a PhD program.
Okay.
Exactly.
That type of format and that type of.
I came to this with, so this was the first EPI course I'd ever taken, but I have like a really weird background. So I'm taking a lot of like the biostats classes,
okay.
And I think it would have been, and I know there are a couple of us in the, at least I know Greg, you, me, and Salima are all in the 8100 class.
Mm-hmm.
In the two. So I think it might have been, just to echo the point of like a boot camp,
mm-hmm.
I think it might have been really helpful because
mm-hmm.
they could probably teach all that material in about 3 weeks.
Okay.
If they did it 3 weeks in like July before people come,
mm-hmm.
it kind of gets people caught up.
Okay.
Because I think, the quantitative tool set, there's a difference between like the quantitative tool set and then how to contextualize that within study design and stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? And the EPI stuff teaches you how to contextualize, right? But this biostat stuff is like, this is the toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just to get people caught up, because there are so many people taking that course, it might have been helpful just to have like a quick boot camp where they could have, I mean, I think probably taught that material and
mm-hmm.
8120, which I'm also taking, which is categorical analysis.
Okay.
There's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
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 I did that last semester.
Yeah.
Okay.
These biostat courses you're talking about, these are required for you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
They're prereqs.
They're prereqs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a lot of us are doing mainly prereqs this year, I think.
Okay.
Some of us, yeah.
Right.
There is an applied regression course during the summer.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah. This one, both for applied progression and categorical.
Okay.
I don't think tuition is covered over the summer. I remember looking into that a little bit the summer before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a big factor.
Oh, that is.
Yeah,
because then
funding.
When will you get caught
yeah.
up with this?
Yeah.
Like
so, I mean,
you've mentioned, there's
spend.
A course in the summer that would get you caught up with like EPI methods. If you couldn't afford to take that, then what would you do? When would
I
you
can't
do
afford
it?
What I'm doing now, but because my grant hasn't come through yet.
Oh.
So, you know, funding's a whole separate issue.
Okay.
Right. So if the
okay.
funding doesn't cover you for the summer, then you have to take it
yeah.
during the academic, once the academic year proper sort of starts.
Yeah.
Or just
you have
keep
to,
working the two or three jobs you have to
yeah.
yourself
yeah.
during the year.
Right. Yeah.
Leah, I would like to come back to the funding. Could we
yeah.
just park that and remember to come back to that? I think
mm-hmm.
that's something that I would like us to talk about as a separate thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts about expectations so far? Is there anything that you really hope happens before the end of the semester where you're thinking, if this doesn't happen before December, I'm going to be really disappointed?
Okay. I mean, my expectations were slightly different because I did my MD at MPH outside the United States. So,
okay.
You know, I'm first time studying here as an international student. So I used to take courses during my years here as the program coordinator, so I also work here. And I don't feel any different being a DRPA student because it's just like I'm taking two courses.
Huh.
You know,
I
couldn't take more than two courses because of my work requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get a feeling of being a student here, being in a cohort here. Maybe it will change over time because we are planning to
mm-hmm.
meet. But, you know, and also, there is some lack of, I think there is lack of information sharing. For example, I don't know when the seminars are happening, when all these clusters are meeting. So maybe, you know, I think I need to be more proactive, but if there is a place where I can find all this information, maybe,
yeah.
you know, for doctoral students, when each of the clusters are meeting, when there are, you know, seminars.
Mm-hmm.
We do get emails about what's happening in EPI generally,
mm-hmm.
but not for specific cluster meetings.
Okay.
Who is in charge of the clusters?
And also an advisor. I mean, has anybody gotten an advisor?
Yeah,
yet?
I mean, I kind of like feel like I sort of just figured it out. But yeah, I've been told
been
that I was going to be
assigned
somebody, and I never was. Yeah.
Okay.
Does that fall into the category of something you would really want to happen before December?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess along those lines. I mean, just echoing what you said, I don't think we've met. The only other PhD students I've met have been like incidentally.
Right.
Like
we figured out that
like, we haven't. I don't think there's ever there hasn't been like a
yeah. And there was like the newsletter
yeah.
that had our bios and that's
yeah.
like how I know people.
I think we're having lunch next week with someone.
Yes.
But you know, it's kind of a little
and the honestly even the required course like did you guys get that 2x2 newsletter that had required courses in our bios? I keep it on my desk. That's
right.
Pretty much most of what I know about the PhD program. I have the page bookmarked.
I think it would have been really helpful to have like maybe 3 days of sort of doctoral student orientation because I think
yeah.
having like being a part of a cohort is actually a really rewarding experience that, you know, in a lot of ways, like this is the first time we've actually formally met up as
yeah.
a group,
wow.
PhD
mm-hmm.
students.
Yeah,
and that,
serious.
Yeah, it's
well,
true.
No,
I mean,
we had one meeting with
Oh, yeah,
Sharon.
We did meet in August.
Oh, I
missed
that.
Even
yeah.
on the phone.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah,
and even like the, you know, to do it in advance, obviously, I mean, a lot of people, I think part of the reason that it's so fragmented, a lot of us were. A lot of us have kids. I mean, people just have crazy schedules, right? So I think, you know, it's hard to plan a time that we can all meet. We've found that.
Also, I mean, I come out of PopFam, which is a much smaller department. PopFam also likes to party a lot, but we're very social. And
yeah.
so I don't feel like I know the EPI department.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I work on the floor, and
mm-hmm.
I don't even know everybody who works on the 16th floor. So
wow.
I don't know if this is an issue in EPI generally, because I wasn't a master's student here, but does the EPI
yeah.
department get together? Does it have a departmental
right.
camaraderie?
To have like a monthly, even like a monthly meeting so that again, it was like a set time that people could plan for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, definitely before December, it'd be nice to meet like other PhD students.
Yeah,
like
a Thursday night, you
yeah.
know, pizza or whatever and just
and the
like,
people who are further along, I mean, I meet them in Abdul too because we TA everyone. So we met some
okay.
of the other, you know, people who are further along, but to get to know their experiences in the second
yeah.
or the third year.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be helpful. Yeah. So I'm going to move on to a couple of questions sort of about your course learning. And I think some of this has been touched on in the idea of getting a lot of, just so that I'm hearing correctly, you're doing a lot of methods courses right now, but the skills courses will be later or?
The other way around.
Okay, so you're getting the.
So I'm getting the, like, the bio stats back, but
right.
I'm not actually on the EPI track yet.
Right, okay.
So I guess I'm going to start with this question. Is there anything, this sort of relates to the idea too of things that you'd like to happen by December, anything that you haven't learned yet that you think you'd like to learn before the end of the semester that is feasible within the structure that you're in? So obviously you'd love to get these other courses that you can't get until the summer, but in terms of the courses that you are taking, is there content that you're hoping will be covered by December, by the end of the semester? Things that you're hoping the instructor will touch on, and perhaps they appear in the syllabus, perhaps they don't, but things that you're thinking, in this course, we really better cover X before it's over.
Well, I'm in EP3 and EP4, and both of those are great classes, and I feel like I'm getting out of them when I need to and enjoying them. I think for the bio class, I think, like, by December, the core epidemiologists part would be
and maybe some pathophysiology as opposed to genetics.
Right.
So I took a look at your syllabus, or what seems to be the syllabus, and like as somebody with a clinical background, it's just, it seems like this is like trying to do basic genetics out of medical school in a term. And it's just, it does, you guys like don't really go through any organ systems in real detail. Even like the genetics is done at a level that's just not, it's like for a geneticist rather than an epidemiologist.
Right.
And so, I don't know, I feel like, you know, if I was thinking about what would be important for an epidemiologist to learn out of like clinical medicine, it wouldn't be what was covered in that course.
And which course is this? Just, this is the bio course?
Biology and physiology for epidemiologists. And so, I really don't know what should be covered, but it's definitely, it seems like, I don't know how it then ties back to epi. It's a lot of biology, but kind of hastily put together, and it doesn't, and then the discussion that ensues, or the articles we read are not really epi articles, it's really hardcore biology articles, right?
Yeah, I think it presumes a level of, like, biochem and molecular bio that
we do not have.
Are you taking this class, there?
No,
you don't have to.
I will have to take it, so I'm hoping that
just in terms of epi, I mean, it's very narrow. It's super, super narrow. And it's presuming that, you know, everything is caused by genetics. And as we know, as epidemiologists, that isn't the case. It's just really not a holistic approach, which the title makes it sound like.
And I think, I mean, specifically in our department or our cohort, a lot of people aren't doing particularly biologic research interests. Mm-hmm. And the people that are, you know, Arvin and Abdul, and they already have, I mean, they're physicians, so.
And would you concur with Abdul's sentiment that it seems like trying to condense a sort of medical curriculum into, you know, 14 weeks?
I sort of agree. I think it's, I don't feel like a lot of information is trying, they're trying to cram a lot of info in a short time. I think it's just like pulling, I think it dives in really deep to what seems to be random things. And so like it still feels like a survey class, but a survey of like really stuff that's just way over my head.
So it's like a survey of the ocean floor as opposed to the ocean surface.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
I think though I'm not taking the class, when I hear you talking about this, what I think should be ideal is, you know, following a simple clinical medicine textbook rather than getting a lot of information from different places, a superficial knowledge of medicine, maybe a textbook followed by a nursing school, not an actual MD clinical medicine book, but a simpler book followed by physiotherapy or a nursing school, minus the details of therapeutics. I think it will help to get a superficial.
What I was thinking would be really helpful is if, you know, you went through the basic genetic dogma, like in a day, right? It's like lecture-based course. This is what the dogma is. Here's how people think about genetics and how geneticists think about genetics. Mm-hmm. And then, like, here's a day on cardiovascular pathophysiology. Here's a day on neurologic pathophysiology, going through the neuron structure, how the neuron works, what neurotransmitters are.
Right.
And, like, the next day might be, like, musculoskeletal pathology in terms of people who want to go in occupational or whatever epidemiology. And how these basic things work and how, like, a a clinician might think about these things. Because to be honest, like what you guys, what people who are not doing clinical medicine who do epidemiology need to be able to do is talk to people who exactly who do these things.
Okay.
And so understanding, like having insight on what they do, and how they think about what they do, and then what they're dealing with,
mm-hmm.
that's like, that's the skill set.
Okay.
I think many clinical, simple clinical medicine textbooks follow the same
yeah.
pattern.
Yeah.
So you don't have to fish around to, you know, get some information which you think will be useful, because I think you need a broad idea of everything happening in health
right.
and medicine to, you know,
right.
do epidemiology.
Right. And your point that, and I think you and Seth both made the same point, that it doesn't seem to have the four epidemiologists part. So even just linking it back to that lens, as you were saying, Abdul, how, as an epidemiologist, will you talk to a person, you know, to a clinician or a
yes.
physician about this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, none of us that aren't geneticists are going to ever try to conduct this genetic study without
no.
involving someone much more qualified,
right.
you know.
Right,
yeah.
I mean, it seems also, though, like the professor was kind of like last minute pulled in and
mm-hmm.
had to throw a course together in
mm-hmm.
like no
yeah.
time. And so what do you do when you're under pressure?
Sure.
It's like,
I'm sure she's just as frustrated.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So then sort of turning that on its head in the positive, what have you learned so far this semester that feels valuable or important, especially in terms of your development as an epidemiologist and sort of how you see your coursework right now fitting into your sort of, you know, career ambitions and goals?
I found the applied regression course, which is not a, you know, which is a required course, of course, not by an AP course. So I found it really good class and very useful.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to use some of those techniques, but I never learned the theory behind or what are the assumptions for doing each of these tests. So it's a very good class. But as you said, I think we could, I think you said that, we could finish that class in couple of weeks or, you know, because we are learning a little bit every week, so maybe we should have we should go for a compressed or a brief version of that course. And I'm also taking history of FEP. It's a good class, but it's very heavy on assignments, and I'm not sure whether I am gaining much from the assignments, because, you know, analyzing a data set from 1916, I mean, I think, you know, it has a point, but the amount of time I spend on the assignment, I don't know if whether it's going to directly help my doctoral training. It, you know, if we are just going to read about it, I mean, we could read just from any textbook. We don't need to sit in a class, but especially because most of the class time is used to discuss the assignments, and there is not much learning happening in the class other than reviewing or, you know, readings from the previous
okay.
class or assignments.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I also, I think we put quite a lot of time into each weekly assignment, much more than I expected. And it's, we get the impression that, well, he said that last year, I think he got feedback that his assignments were too general, so now we get 30, 40 questions per week. I mean,
wow.
most of my assignments are 10 pages single-spaced
yeah,
and take 10 to 12 hours to do.
Every week?
Yep.
Every week.
Wait.
And we don't get them till Friday, and they're due Wednesday. And
that's
this is normal. I mean, I've, yeah. So, and it's,
wow.
and it's a, I think he
did
can't.
Did you say 10 papers? I just
10 pages
yeah,
single-spaced, yeah. And I mean, I've tried doing, this is bad to say, but I've tried to do a little less, and when I do, it is certainly reflected in the points. I mean, he expects that much work. So, and it is a little bit tangential to the core of what we want to learn. It's a history class, and you know, while that has some value, it's really not the focus of our.
But I feel like he has the tools, I mean, himself, to make this a methodology class if he wanted
yes.
to. And I feel frustrated that he, it's a 3-hour class, and we spend, what, 2 and change
yeah.
going over the homework?
Mm-hmm.
This is Alfredo?
Yes, whereas he actually could use that time very productively
right.
to educate us
mm-hmm.
about what, I mean, he's perceiving what we get. It's more like a tutorial where you're expected to teach yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's very excited about the methods part, which is great. I mean, I'd rather get methods out of it than history, honestly.
I'd
I think most of us would.
Teach it.
But he doesn't teach it because he assumes that as PhD students, we already come in with it, and certainly not true of me. So I mean that when I do take notes in the class, it is when he's talking about methods, and I appreciate the concept of analyzing a data set from 1916 to practice methods. But again, that's not taught, that's not reviewed. Mm. He, you know, he says that he could teach us R in outside of class, which is a statistical program. Mm-hmm. And you know, we did voice that we were a little frustrated. He said, oh, I offered to teach you R, but I mean, we certainly don't have time to learn a whole statistical program in outside hours.
Wait, and that's a separate class.
That's a
class.
Whole separate class, right?
And
he's just like, oh, if that's what you guys were interested in, you should have come to learn that with me.
I really do think that he could switch this around. I mean, he could be made to work. We did talk with him about it, but he doesn't seem to have
No, that hasn't.
Gotten.
We've now gotten, yeah.
So just so I'm hearing right.
He's a really nice guy, and he's really passionate
sure.
about what he teaches. Like,
that's right.
Sure. So you spend most of the time in class going over the assignments, though.
Mm-hmm.
When do you get new content? So does the new content come to you through the assignment that you're meant to read something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then write about it.
And it's
okay.
a historical paper. It's not a methods paper. We read original papers from, you know, 1916 and get the accompanying data set or make it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then
okay
yeah, but we don't read any epi methods or stuff.
Okay,
it's just supposed to be extracted from.
Okay,
and learning, you know, after you've struggled with something, to be told just that you did it wrong isn't very educational.
Mm.
It'd be better if you actually told us, you know, this week's assignment you're going to be doing this kind of analysis, let's talk about how you do this kind of analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having us be surprised.
Yeah. I thought it was like gonna be I'm not in the course, but I thought it was going to be more of like a history of the evolution of of epidemiology.
It is. I mean, it is. And he knows so much about it. But again, there's like, what, half an hour at the end of class that we actually
yeah.
get a little bit
so
of
So it's just like uninspired evolution of epidemiology.
He's
so
very
inspired.
He's
very inspiring.
But the class itself.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just want to, so your expectations that this is a history of the evolution of epi is somewhat being met in that that's what he's trying to do. But it's the execution of that. Right, that you're having a problem with. I'm just trying to figure out if it is really not, if he's not attempting to teach the evolution of epi, you know.
Well, it gets crammed into this.
It gets crammed
hour.
Into that, right?
And
he gets bogged down in details, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I know he has so much. I actually took EpiOne with him, and then he had 3-hour lectures
right.
with a captive audience to talk about history of epi. It was fabulous. Incredible. And I feel I want more out of him of that if that's what he's really passionate about and that's what this
right.
class is supposed to be. But if but our homeworks don't reflect that. Our homeworks
are methods and then we don't talk about
methods. So it's
kinda
like we're not getting methods.
Yeah, it's
okay.
neither
and
here
I,
nor there. Yeah.
I get the disconnect now. So the homework isn't about the history.
No.
It's about methods.
Occasionally
okay.
there'll be a question where you have
that's
to do all this original document
missing.
Research
mm.
that is a history question, which I also
mm-hmm.
don't appreciate because I don't need to practice researching original historical archives.
What's the purpose of doing that? Like, what's the rationale?
To contextualize stuff, right? But that, I mean, those questions tend to take quite a lot of time when we are expected to do outside historical research. Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to be more focused either towards history or towards methods,
mm-hmm.
but one, not both at
not
once.
Both.
And that it seems like the workload is excessive.
Yeah,
the workload.
But that's my main problem with the course because when we started, it was manageable and it's increasing after each session. And now my quality of work is dropping because
mm.
I'm struggling to finish and submit it by Wednesday noon. So sometimes I cannot do the proper research because my priority is to finish it and submit.
Okay.
Not
okay.
about the quality of what I'm submitting.
How many of you are in that class?
Just the three of us.
That's
three.
Three.
Oh,
very
there
small
are others
class.
In the class.
Sure,
right?
Yeah. Sure,
the
sure.
class
but
is about 8 students.
Yeah.
Six.
You came to another
class
today.
Go ahead.
I was going to just say that. So for critical thinking in EPI, for EPI 4, I think that that has been exactly as advertised, and it's
mm.
been sort of good for me because I. As everyone knows, approach it more as like critical thinking from like an SMS perspective, which
mm-hmm.
is where I come from. And so I think that class has really, you know, despite my resistance, kind of forced me to really think. It's a different kind of critical thinking than I'm used to, and I'm definitely learning slowly, I think, how to do it. And I think by the end of the class, it will
found it to be a really good course.
Great.
Learning a lot.
Yeah. So you talked about biology, history, Epi 4. There's another course you mentioned, Epi 3?
Oh, yeah.
That's a master's level.
I'm very happy with Epi 3. It's very well structured.
The prereq that I'm cramming in.
Yeah.
Are you taking it with Mary Beth?
Yeah. Yeah. She's great. I mean, it's, that course has been done so many times. It's
pretty
well
organized.
Yes, it is.
So thinking a little bit, and some of you had mentioned, you know, the sort of absence of opportunities to network socially or even just to know one another's names. Moving a little bit to think about your learning experience and kind of the environment, what were some of the most influential factors, access to instructors, learning activities, assessments, resources, or the absence of those things, that have influenced your experience so far in the program? What do you think has really characterized, what do you think has contributed to your experience in the program so far, either for better or for ill?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the, you were talking about, like, sorry, can you repeat?
Sure. So I guess I'm thinking, if you could look back in the past, and it hasn't been that long, 6 weeks so far?
Mm-hmm.
What has been, if you could say, overall my experience has been X, and I think this has been the largest contributor to that, what would that be?
Mm-hmm.
And you can, you know, sort of speak. I've had a positive experience because of my, you know, because I've had access to these instructors, or I've had, unfortunately, ordinarily I would give the example of because I've really liked my advisor, but you don't know who your advisor is. Or you could say, you know, I've felt lost so far because I haven't really been able to connect to other students. I don't know who my advisor is. So if you could just sort of think about some of the causal factors. I know causal being a dangerous word to epidemiologists.
Sorry, have there been enough studies on that?
Exactly. We have a very small N here. Does that clarify for you a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we've talked a lot about the learning activities and assessment, so maybe you could focus in on some of the other things, you know, the environment. You know, Leah mentioned access to instructors, and you touch a little bit on not feeling like a cohort and that type of thing. So we want you to think broadly, all right? Not just what's happening in classes now, but just generally.
Or even like the past 6 weeks have been really stressful for me because my funding didn't come through, or I'm not really sure where to submit these documents, or things like that.
I mean, so in my case, I know I came here because my supervisor moved here. I know that. So I've been working constantly with him since the last 4 years. And being finally back on the ground in New York has been, you know, a breath of fresh air because I feel like I'm back plugged into things. And, you know, I eat, sleep, drink Epi all day, which has its downfalls. But I've found it to be exactly what I wanted. I'm also not in the two trouble courses that seem to be, like, trouble for people. So that also might be shaping my experience. But overall, I've felt like I've gotten everything I wanted out of it. You know, sometimes I wish there was a little bit more time today, but you deal with the 24 you've been given. So I've been pretty happy.
Great.
I think for me, the glue that's held it all together has been TAing Epi 1. That has been a fabulous experience. That talked about a well-oiled machine. Incredible. And I feel like they really have made an effort to make the TAs a cohort. We meet every week for an hour. There's a lot of internet communication. It's terrific. And obviously I got to know the two instructors of that class, but the parade of people who've gone by on the podium, that's kind of how I've gotten to know the Epi department.
The lectures are really good.
They're great. Yeah. And but these are people that I wish I had opportunities to meet otherwise, but at least I get to hear them.
I feel like I haven't done quite as much of this as I'd like, but when I have reached out to professors and, you know, you say you're a PhD student, the response is really, really positive and everyone's very open and, you know, you get a warm reception, people are excited, respect you, and that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that was my experience too, because whenever I tried to reach out to instructors or professors, they were very happy and, you know, willing to share their data set. So my only concern is I don't have enough time to utilize all the resources we have here.
So to follow up on that, so like you just said, you don't have enough time to utilize the resources. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel like there are lots of resources available to you?
I think so, yeah.
Do you think
there's
so?
A lot of seminars. So the Cougar seminar, the
mm-hmm.
Cider seminar. There's all these seminars. I can't go to all of them because I work, but they seem very educational. I went to a couple. Lillian is always very helpful. She's on email.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I have a problem, I just go to Lillian and she'll solve it for you.
She's like my mom.
Yeah, exactly. She's like the big
mama. She's like my mom.
So that's, And the getting to know the cohort, I think they're trying. It's probably, we're meeting Sandro next week. It's just a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not very worried about that part, I think. EP4 has been my highlight, I think. I can't say that enough. I mean, the instructor is very accessible. The bio class has not been that, but hopefully it can be improved. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a pet fellow, and so that was sort of why I came.
Uh-huh.
So far that I'm glad. I mean, it's meeting all my expectations, and I think that's the resource that I. Everything about it is exactly what I wanted so far.
So thinking about the whole sort of gestalt of the program, what do you think, what elements of the program, either access to instructors or non-access to instructors, or the amount of time that you're in class, or funding, or people answering emails or not answering emails, submitting paperwork, what do you think most sort of gets in the way of learning? Is there anything that you'd say, if I could just eliminate that, I could spend so much more time actually focusing on learning? And it might be more than one thing, or it might be nothing, which would be lovely.
The fact that every day only has 24 hours.
We're working on
60
that.
60
minutes. We have a committee.
A committee
that's been organized to address that issue.
Homework and...
Yeah, in history, yeah.
In history of MP.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds awful.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
I spend as much time on homework as I do on the job I need to have to support...
I was worried about EP3 because I hadn't taken any of the prereqs, and I thought that history would be a nice complement to that, so I could spend lots of time on EP3.
Mm-hmm.
Total opposite.
Oh,
I spend much, much more time on history.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's my issue.
I'm really excited about the trajectory the department is taking
mm-hmm.
under Sandro's leadership, but I wish we have more international exposure. Now most of Columbia, AP projects are either in Africa, most of it is in Africa related to ICAP, and there is really, I don't know if there is a serious or proactive effort to expand to other parts of the world, for example, Asia, and but my learning experience here has been really good, except for minor things.
Mm-hmm. I think also actually coming from PopFam, and I think sort of weird figuring out how to navigate the interdepartmental politics sometimes. So I think I like when there are kind of interdisciplinary approaches. I think, and some of the people, certainly Sandro in the department, are very for moving more in that direction. But I think it's a slow process.
Yeah, I mean, I think the work, I'm not in the history of EPI class, but for me, I think the workload has been a lot, but what I expected to when I decided to do a PhD program, and there's really nothing. The only thing that gets in my way is my own schedule, my own scheduling. So I don't have any complaints or about workload or that kind of stuff.
I heard somewhere, I forgot where I heard it. Several people told me this, but like, so as a PhD student, if you're getting A's, your priorities are mixed up. And
you're probably what?
Your priorities are mixed up.
What should you be getting?
I mean, the argument being that like you should be focused on extracurricular research activities or whatever else it is that you're doing, which is the purpose. Because at the end of the day, if you think about it, just purely responding to one's incentive set, nobody's ever going to judge your PhD grades ever, right? Nobody's ever going to be like, so what were your grades?
Mm-hmm.
We saw that you had 55 publications, but what were the grades? We want to see those. And at the end of the day, That's been a bit of a learning process of like, well, I could go all out on this homework, or I could go work on this paper that I'm writing. So I'll just leave my homework aside and then like pick up my homework. No, they're perfections. And so I think that's a skill that I didn't realize would be as difficult to learn. Mm-hmm. Like unlearning doing the best work that you can. Which is odd to say. I understand, that's fine. I just dropped it to the floor. But I'm wondering if like it might have been nice to just have, you know, in concordance with this ideal, like meet everybody orientation and take early biostats if you want to. It might have been interesting just kind of talking around negotiating PhD life and how do you respond to a new incentive set that's not the one that you've been responding to. I mean, at least if you've been a student your whole life like I have, that you've been responding to your whole, you know, academic career.
Actually, there was a glitch in coursework.
Oh, yeah.
In the beginning of the year. And those of us who signed up for History of EPI and Biology and Pathophysiology of EPI were only given pass-fail as a grading option.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And I thought to myself, oh, that's because I'm a PhD
student.
And nobody's going to ever ask about my grades. In fact, I can't go any further than this. So what's the point of being graded? And I actually think it's a really good idea. And then they switched them back to grades.
Yeah.
And all this got really...
After we'd handed in our first... You and I.
Right.
After we'd handed in our assignments.
In theory, should we be necessarily competing for that A?
Right.
Pass-fail may actually just put people in the frame of mind. You're learning this for your own benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're adults now. You don't have to be graded.
Most med schools have gone to pass-fail.
Yeah.
Yes. Pass-fail grading for that
PNS
reason.
Has, yeah.
And
they even
decide... the school here do pass-fail honors.
I mean, that might not.
Yeah, I got careless. Like, I made addition mistakes on our EPI 3 midterm, and most of my points often related to that, and I was telling my boss, I was like, yeah, so it turns out that I made addition mistakes. She's like, I'm so sorry. I was like, no, I was thrilled. Like, there was a point in my life, like, that was great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if I make addition mistakes.
Yeah.
Like, because you know addition.
Yeah.
And I also realized the course is not pass or fail. After 2 or 3 weeks, and it was like a shock. Oh, my God, now I need to worry about my grades. And at night when I was working on my homework, I thought, oh, I'm back in high school.
So I think we've heard a lot about this. I just want to ask, again, sort of more generally, if there's anything else just in terms of the real positives that you see in the program and then also the real negatives. So we've heard that EPI 4 is a great class, that you're enjoying EPI 3, obviously, although it's not actually part of this program, that Lillian's great. Hopefully you'll get a chance to talk to your advisors soon. Anything else that you think hasn't really been touched on that you think is a real strength of this program, something really positive, something where you'd say, make sure that you don't take that away because it's a really positive element in this
sure.
mix.
I think these new courses, which are designed just for PhD students, when I was looking at different schools for, I knew ever since I was here, I knew about this new curriculum, and I found really useful compared to many schools. We have these dedicated programs for PhD students beyond master's level, you know, courses.
It's just clear. It's just obvious that everyone is like cares and is obviously trying to make this as good as it can be, and it's nice to be in that kind of environment.
The administration here is actually really good. I also am a student at PNS, and PNS has some administrative issues, some real administrative issues, and this has actually been a breath of fresh air. Like, you know, when they say a check's coming, it's actually coming, or when you know, like, I sign up for a class, I'm actually in the class. I know about meetings when they come, so it's actually been pretty good.
And also the flexibility of the department, EPI department.
Yes.
So if you know, it's up to you. If you think you're capable of taking this course, you don't need to take that course. Why don't you go straight and take this advanced course? If you think you can manage, which I really, I mean, they're considering us as mature students, so I really appreciate that.
Communication's been excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, through Lillian, the whole 2x2 thing, I think that that's really good, because and PopFam was as well, but I feel that supports us a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, it's you just feel taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I get those emails several times a day. I feel like somebody in EPI loves me.
Yeah.
And I think the other students are great too.
Yes.
I mean, we're like everyone, yeah. I mean, we haven't done a ton of cohort things, but everybody's
been. Yeah.
Yeah, I have heard before coming here somebody telling, I think somebody told me, ECWI really takes care of their doctoral students,
mm-hmm.
but not that much their master's students.
Oh.
None of us did a master's in FAU.
Yeah.
That's good. We have a nice clean thing slate here. Anything really negative or difficult about the program that you think hasn't been captured yet that you want to make sure we know about?
I wouldn't say negative, but I do think bang off in the beginning of the year or even an orientation prior to.
Yeah, would be a big. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know they have an orientation. I don't know if any of us went to any of
that's
those events.
That's the master's.
Yeah,
orientation.
Yeah.
I when I was a master's student, it's nothing for PhDs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think funding, mm-hmm. dedicated PhD or doctoral program funding.
Yeah, it would be helpful.
Because I know some schools that, you know, when you join, you have 4 years of funding. You don't need to worry about your tuition waiver. It's a small amount, maybe. I think for Emory, it's like $27,000
mm.
per year. They have decide for each PhD student, and they will only admit 4 or 5 students because of their funding, but
mm-hmm.
you don't have to worry about your tuition.
Mm.
You get this money. Yeah.
So, in our last 3 minutes or so, Michelle, were there any specific questions you had about funding that we should?
No, I just wanted to give people opportunity because it started to come up a little bit that it could be an issue. So I just want to give people opportunity to say anything about that you think that the administration should know. I mean, you just made a good point. You know,
dedicated funding
would be great, but this is Columbia.
They did, you know, take away the tuition benefit for employees at the end of last year, and
yes,
Suzu and I made a, yeah, and it would have immediately affected both Suzu and I, and we put up quite a fight. It was a fun bonding experience for us, and
yeah.
But I must say, it actually, I mean, the department couldn't have been more supportive. It was, they were fantastic.
They
the department, the administration, everyone except for Lee Goldman, I felt was
yeah.
fighting for us. I mean, again, we certainly fought.
Yeah, but then next year.
Yeah, so that's going to hugely
that'll be
affect.
A huge impact. We were covered
mm-hmm.
because we had gotten in,
mm-hmm.
but from next year there's no tuition
right.
benefit for employees.
Right.
So
yeah,
I think it's a
too
big,
too
big.
Yeah, and I know everyone tried their best to make that not happen, but yes.
Yeah, so I think I would assume it will contract the PhD program will be very small
mm-hmm.
now because a lot of people work full time
mm-hmm.
in our cohort. So that's
mm-hmm.
tragic.
I think the department is very good because my training grant hasn't come through yet, Life Force, and you know they were able to find me a part-time job. They were also able to find a little extra slush money, and you know one way or the other, and some TAing work, and it's
okay.
all been cobbled together. It was stressful until that was all in place, and it does mean working a lot of hours a week.
Right. Okay.
But I do think the department went all out to try to make it work.
So
they
okay.
Yeah, they do their best in a difficult situation. And in the journalistic style of always ending any interview with the question, is there anything else you want to tell me? Which is sometimes actually where you get, I've talked to some of my friends who are journalists, and I was like, that's when people tell you, like, yes, I was deep throat, or like, I, you know, that's where you get, like, the real meat of, like, okay, let's keep the tape rolling. Anything else that you want to make sure makes it sort of on to a...
I was not deep throat.
I said it all.
Yeah.
I think.
You did.
Yeah.
Left it all on the field. Good.
Yes.
On the mic.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Mic.
Any
mics.
One of these mics. It'd be funny if those were all decoys and these bulbs were really the
yeah.
lanterns were really the listening devices.
That's really scary.
Yeah. Well, thank you all so much for your input.
Thank
it's
you
incredibly
very much.
Valuable.
You guys were great.
Hugely
thank
valuable
you.
To the department as well. So
yeah.
thank you.
Are you
going to
break this into 140 character pieces and tweet?
Exactly. We will. You can follow us at studentspying at twitter.com. And take some more muffins.
Thanks so much. So, how many months now?
6.